Dorothy Day's journey from radical journalist to Catholic activist defies our usual categories. In The Long Loneliness, she reveals how a passionate search for justice led her to an unexpected spiritual home. Her story resonates across political divides because it speaks to our deepest human longings for meaning, community, and a faith that demands action. What makes her memoir so compelling is its raw honesty about spiritual struggle. Day never sanitizes her past or presents her conversion as a tidy resolution. Instead, she shows how the same fierce commitment that drove her revolutionary politics ultimately led her to Catholicism. In a world where faith and radical politics are often seen as incompatible, Day's life demonstrates how they can be two expressions of the same underlying passion for a more just world. Her integration of deep Catholic devotion with unwavering commitment to workers and the poor continues to challenge both religious and secular communities to live their values more authentically. Dorothy's early spirituality flourished despite her nominal Protestant upbringing, finding inspiration through Methodist neighbors and Catholic friends' saints' stories. Her religious experiences were intensely physical. A neighbor's prayer sparked an unforgettable surge of love and gratitude, leading her to prolonged kneeling and recruiting her sister to practice being saints. The Episcopal liturgy, particularly the Te Deum and Benedicite, brought her deep joy. In adolescence, Dorothy grappled with spiritual physical tensions, confiding to religious friends about bodily shame and declaring, "God is spiritual. We must harden ourselves to these feelings." Her family's physical reserve intensified these conflicts. At university, she rejected religion after a professor dismissed faith as comfort for the weak, though her forceful denial suggested deeper spiritual attachments. Day's university years drew her into radical politics, where she found secular community and purpose. Despite living in poverty, scrubbing laundry for rent, she embraced her freedom, attending chosen classes and joining New York's radical scene. The 1917 Russian Revolution transformed her. At Madison Square Garden, she joined thousands singing workers' hymns celebrating victory over the Tsar. That summer in New York proved magical, living on MacDougall Street, hosting radicals, and singing revolutionary songs. They formed deep bonds, bringing strangers home for all-night political discussions. Her justice work led to imprisonment with suffragists. During a 10-day hunger strike, she found spiritual meaning. Those first 6 days were torturous, lying in darkness, feeling nausea and emptiness. In this stripped state, she found solace in childhood psalms. The Palmer Red Raids brought another arrest and humiliation. Being forced to undress before detectives strengthened her revolutionary resolve. Yet she found grace when imprisoned prostitutes showed her unexpected kindness, mistaking her silence for fear. The most unexpected turn in Day's journey came through Forster, an English biologist whose love of nature awakened her to creation's beauty. Their life on Staten Island Beach brought contentment, yet she sensed a greater happiness to be obtained from life than any I had ever known. This natural happiness led her towards God. Her relationship with Forster brought fulfillment, especially during pregnancy. After years fearing infertility, motherhood completed something essential in her. The birth of her daughter Tamar catalyzed Day's conversion. She struggled between her growing faith and Forster, knowing that baptizing Tamar would cause a rending in my human relations. She wanted Tamar to have the structure and instruction my own life had lacked. Her own baptism brought no joy. She approached it grimly, coldly, torn between leaving Forster and abandoning her radical political work. Though she opposed capitalism and saw the church as lined up with property, with the wealthy, with all the forces of reaction, she never regretted her choice. Day's path changed when she met Peter Morin, a French peasant philosopher who helped found the Catholic worker movement. His vision was creating a society in which it is easier for people to be good through roundtable discussions, houses of hospitality, and farming communes that merged radical critique with Catholic teaching. Starting with just $57, Day launched the Catholic Worker newspaper at a penny per copy. Circulation soared from 2,500 to 100,000 copies within months, reaching readers from Mexican mattresses to Nova Scotia mines. The movement expanded rapidly to 33 houses and farms nationwide, with Catholic Worker papers in multiple cities. These communities embraced voluntary poverty, often foregoing modern amenities. Their revolutionary approach centered on radical hospitality, practicing the gospel works of mercy by feeding, clothing, and sheltering anyone in need, defying conventional institutional approaches to social problems. The Catholic Worker's pacifist stance through multiple wars, Ethiopia, Spanish Civil War, World War II, and Korea, proved deeply controversial. After Pearl Harbor, their circulation dropped from 160,000 to 50,000 as readers rejected their anti-war position. Their pacifism drew from theological roots. Bob Ludlow, their pacifist theorist, cited the early church's tradition, where saints and church fathers opposed military service. He compared this to Catholic sexual ethics. If the church held absolute positions on sexual morality despite practical challenges, it should do likewise with war. When questioned about defending loved ones, he advocated non-lethal restraint, believing perfect love casts out fear. The community proved this principle by subduing a violent knife-wielding attacker without deadly force, securing psychiatric care rather than punishment. Members held diverse views, including Tom Sullivan, a Pacific War veteran who edited their pacifist paper while refusing the pacifist label, believing in sharing others' wartime suffering. Day's autobiography reveals that the only answer in this life to the loneliness we are all bound to feel is community. This insight emerged from witnessing both personal and collective isolation. Her community included difficult members, like Steve Hergenhahn, a bitter German carpenter who, dying of cancer, returned to Mott Street as his true family. He eventually accepted that his suffering was the spiritual work of his life. The Catholic Worker community faced challenges. At Mary Farm, internal conflicts forced property separation when one family claimed exclusive rights while damaging resources. Day learned that community requires both acceptance and boundaries. Peter Morin's death in 1949 marked a turning point. His brilliant mind had failed in his final years, leaving him silent. We who loved him understood God had completed Peter's self-stripping, taking even his keen intellect, Day wrote. It all began simply. We were just sitting there talking when Peter Morin came in. People formed lines needing bread, and somehow we divided what little we had. Their work's essence was love, sometimes a harsh and dreadful thing that tests faith. We cannot love God without loving each other, and we know each other in the breaking of bread, she wrote. Heaven is a banquet, and life too, even with just a crust when shared in companionship. Day's message endures. Through our long loneliness, we discover that love comes with community, not perfect community, but the daily practice of showing up for one another.